Blog Talk Radio.
Radio show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
Welcome to Don't Give Up Radio. I'm your host, Jackie Wayans, and it is a privilege to be with you here again another weekend as we continue to reach towards those dreams, towards those goals, towards those ambitions that God has set in our hearts, those dreams that He has planted there. And yes, life is always there and available to provide challenges and stumbling blocks along the way. But tonight's guest is able to share with us a story that is so powerful about not only the power of God, but when you utilize the power that God has given you, that you can survive even the most horrific circumstances in situations, such as being tortured and kept prisoner in a Bangkok prison for years, and he weathered the storm, and he's here to share with us tonight. Jim Mueller, thank you so much for being with us.
Jackie, thank you for having me. You know, I've listened to your show often, and I'm humbled to be on it. The men and women that you have are incredibly inspiring, and I'm honored that you would place me among them. Thanks for having me.
Wow. Well, I'm touched to hear that you listen to the show. That's great. I'm always wondering who's actually listening out there. So thank you so much for taking the time to do that. And as I shared a little bit last week, I do, when I get the interest in the show and people are interested, I always want to make sure that they definitely are a good fit for the show, that they have had a crossroads moment, that they love the Lord passionately. And it was clear from your initial response that that's who you were. And so I just want to get right into it because I do know that you will have a lot to share and a lot to offer in the way of hope for those who are going through or have loved ones going through a difficult period of time that seems to have no end date on it. But you can put one on it for yourself, and I know that you know that is true. Let's talk about you coming to know the Lord. You did that in 1981, and I want to get an idea of how that happened. You know, what drew you? What were the circumstances to you getting to know Him?
I'm so glad you asked that, because my story of coming to Jesus was not usual. I had no bad life. Everything was great. My father was a great father. My mother was a great mother. My brothers and sisters were wonderful. And we had a small relationship with God in our family. In other words, we acknowledged there was God. But we didn't actually follow God, and we didn't rely on God. What we did was acknowledge there was a God, and our life was good. But there was no thanks. There was no wonder. Life was simple back then. But as I grew up and I went into business, I noticed a couple of things lacking. And that was this. My father worked hard his whole life. He died broke. My grandfather worked hard his whole life. He died broke. And as far as I knew, so did my entire lineage. And I will say this, Jackie, that was an unusual thing, because obviously we're white, we're free, we're American. That was the time where it should have been easy to succeed in the United States. And we were the people who were destined to do so. So there really was no excuse for the financial failure that we had as a family. And what I realized is that we just didn't have confidence to succeed. And that confidence that was lacking was because God was lacking in our life as a leader. And I thought, you know, there has to be a change. This was not acceptable. And I wanted to be different. I wanted it to be different for my children. So my past was from my parents and my grandparents, and I wanted to become my children's future past, so that when my children would look back, they would look at what their parents did and see that it greatly enhanced their life. And I looked for what was lacking, and it was quite frankly God. without God, there's no such thing as a permanent success. So I knew I had to change the way I thought about that. And when you change the way you think, it starts with your belief system. So our belief creates our thoughts. And I thought the belief system I had now and what I grew up with was obviously flawed. And it was flawed because nobody had ever reached that end, the end that they envisioned. What they reached was simply the end. And I wanted to change that. And as I got to know God, I realized that there was a life without end. And there was success without end. And that's what I strove for. And the more I strove for that, the more I got to know Christ, and the more I realized the love of God and how he was willing to take us through each step of life and bring us to the next step.
You know, you said two really powerful things there, and I just have to say that clearly it's almost a Peter and Jesus moment where he asked him, you know, who do men say that I am? And he responds with, you know, you are the Christ, you are the Messiah. And Jesus then says, you know, only God could have revealed that to you. And so this revelation, as you, you know, did your genogram, for those of us who know what that is, just kind of look back on your family and your history and to see what the patterns are and to say, wait a minute, there's something wrong in this area and why is this happening? And that revelation that it was God missing really came from God. He revealed himself to you in that moment to say, I'm what was missing from the equation here. And so I think that is really powerful. I don't know if people heard you when you said this, and that is the goal of this show. You said we can reach an end. We all are going to reach an end, but will it be the envisioned end? And that is the key. Is it the envisioned end? And I think tonight's show and discussion with you is going to be about the power of envisioning. But before we get into that, one of the things I loved about your story is the fact that when you became a believer, it was not just for you. You very quickly got involved with evangelistic work. And you really put yourself out there in the 80s through that. So talk a bit about your passion to get involved with sharing the gospel with others.
You know, I couldn't help it. When I realized the freedom of life and the freedom of the future, you know, the future is a scary thing for people without God, especially in today's world. And it was just as scary for me back then. And as I realized that with Jesus in my life, my future was assured. There was nothing that would be lacking. That didn't mean it was going to be this easy life, but it was so freeing financially, spiritually, and in every other way, because I didn't have the same concerns about how would I eat tomorrow, who would I know tomorrow, who would be around me tomorrow. I didn't care anymore because I knew it was going to be wonderful, and all I had to do was walk forward. And I thought, how can I walk on this path that God has put me in? Because he really did put me on a path to greatness. And I knew it as sure as I know I'm talking to you right now that God has something great in store for us. How could I go there alone? So the first people I reached out to were my loved ones. Mm-hmm. And Jackie, I'll tell you that unfortunately my loved ones knew me, so they didn't come with. They just, right. You know, your prophet has no value in his own home. But I found that there were plenty of people out there that I had influence over in my business life and in my day-to-day activities that I could share Christ with. And I wasn't shocked that they came along. I was overwhelmed by how many came along. But that's because of the power of Christ. And if we can truly hold up Christ, Christ will draw people onto him. And it created a lifestyle for me that was probably unexpected for anybody else in my previous life. I became an evangelist. I enjoyed it. I had great success. People would remark that this couldn't be the same guy, and they were right. It wasn't the same guy. It was a guy transformed by the power of Jesus, and it was really a wonderful time, and I'd suggest it to everybody.
Wow. Well, the way you explain it makes it sound so exciting and so appealing, and it is. It absolutely is, because life is going to be life for everyone. It's whether or not you have an access to peace and joy that is available only through this relationship with the Lord that will get you through the turmoil of life. And I always say on this show, Romans 10, 9 and 10, that if you confess with your mouth Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, that you will be saved. That is a promise. And that's where this joy that Jim is talking about is available for anyone who's listening who may not know him. And I know you're anxious to get into his story and to find out what happened. I know that in the 90s you turned business and finance, but you kept your Christian principles as you did that. And you looked at business as being a ministry in itself. Can you talk about that mindset? Because I think, you know, I'm raising a son. He's in college now. He's a business major. And he was raised in the things of God. And there comes that point where they have to, you know, decide for themselves, am I going to carry these principles on or am I going to just go with the flow? So talk to us about the combination of the two worlds together.
Boy, that's so true. In raising a son myself, I have the same concern. There comes a point where every man and woman has to make a choice. And the choice is whether to keep the character of Christ or to take the character of the world. And sometimes the character of the world, actually every time, the character of the world is quite enticing. But if you know the reality, you realize that that enticement is short-lived. Whatever the reward is can't last. And what's missing in the business world in general today, not in entirety, but a great proportion of it, is the character of fairness, fair play, justice, giving a good product for a good price, giving good service for a good price, and realizing that over a period of time, your business will grow and flourish by those very attributes I'm talking about. But right now, we're looking for the quick rich. We want to win the lottery. Mm-hmm. This is the situation society is in today. And if we can look past that and we can look up into the face of that Savior who went through so much for us and realize if God would hang on a cross for me, if he would send his son to die for me, then how could he let me fail? And I believe he can't let me fail. It's against his nature. So if people are failing, and the nature of God says, I won't let you fail, it must be that we have got out of the path he wants us on. Mm. And that's a shocking awakening when it happens, because it did happen to me. And the rest of my story really comes from that. My business, when I went into business, it was completely dedicated to God. And, Jackie, I was fortunate enough to own what was then the largest option trading firm in Southeast Asia. I owned a very successful fitness center in Bangkok. I directed a great charity foundation in Cambodia. Had a beautiful wife, nice family. Everything that God promised, I had, because God promised I would have a life that was full. But I remember there was a king in the Old Testament by the name of Nebuchadnezzar. He was the king of Babylon, and he was blessed by God. And I remember he said one thing. He said, isn't this Babylon that I had built? And God immediately removed it from him. And sometimes I think that's where my story started. I took credit for the success God gave me. I didn't go into the world. I didn't change my business practice. What I did was I took my focus off the God of heaven and put that focus on the great James Mueller, because I really did think I was great, and that was a foolish thing to think.
Wow. You know, this is going to be a great show. I had been meditating on two verses that I was actually going to share with my son, which is, you know, the foolish man in the New Testament who, you know, gleaned plenty from his harvest. And he said, you know, I will drink and be merry. And there's been lots of commentary on that. But I was looking at Ecclesiastes, and actually King Solomon said the best thing that a man could do is enjoy the fruits of his labor and eat, drink, and be merry. But the difference when he said it was with the acknowledgement of God and the acknowledgement that everything that you have and have achieved came from God. And you didn't see that anywhere in the language when you were talking about the foolish man. He was just thinking, you know, I did this, I created that. And I think it's very interesting that you connect that to the beginning of your real story. And when we come back, we're going to find out how Jim Mueller became imprisoned in Bangkok for years and how the Lord was able to be with him during that time and bring him out.
Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song.
we're back with a very inspiring guest tonight, Mr. Jim Muller. You were just sharing with us that you belong to the Lord, you loved Him, you're doing great things for Him, and as you built your business, you also built it on Christian principles, but we can be doing all of the right things, and yet our heart starts to move away from the Lord. We're not being in His presence, or we're not giving Him the glory or the credit that He deserves. And your business took you to places like Thailand in Southeast Asia. And so what occurred that allowed the situation to occur for your imprisonment?
What occurred was, I took my wife on a honeymoon to Central America. We had come over to the United States after we were married. And while we were on our honeymoon, there was a shooting in one of my companies. One of my employees shot another one of my employees, and he shot him dead. After that happened, there was a lot of press about it and about my financial enterprises and about my companies. And as the investigation into the murder grew, it became a RICO or a criminal enterprise type of investigation. So the investigation led them to believe that this murder was part of the company. The company then, in fact, was guilty of the crime. Everybody associated with the company was guilty of the crime. And as the owner of the company, I should be charged for that crime.
Wow.
So here I am on my honeymoon 12,000 miles away. And I have heard the story that my manager was shot by one of the security guards. The police had visited my office in Bangkok. I reached out to, of course, my attorneys in Thailand and explained to them we'd be on the next plane home as soon as we finished our business, and started that journey home. Unfortunately, at this time, it had reached an international news cycle. And while I was on a plane transferring flights in Atlanta, Georgia, I was arrested by the United States Attorney General's office on behalf of Thailand. And I became at that time the first American ever to be extradited to a foreign country to be charged with a crime that would give the death penalty. And of course, I fought that in court for a short period of time. And when I realized it was futile, and knowing that there was no crime that I was involved with, I gave up that fight. And I went over to Thailand to win that case in court, which was the only place I could win it. Jackie,
okay.
I did, in fact, win that case. And I won it immediately. I wasn't released. They kept me for another 9 years. It was a difficult time.
Oh, wow. So you won the case, and yet they kept you.
The thought pattern was this. I was the first and only American ever sent to a foreign country to be executed by that government. I was the first foreigner ever extradited to Thailand by their own government. There was a huge amount of face involved, and there was a huge amount of new law that was created. And the fact that I was not guilty of any crime negated it all. So the idea was, let's find a way to make him guilty. And in the Kingdom of Thailand, you don't have the same system you have here. In the kingdom,
right.
In the United States, if you win a trial, you go home. In the Kingdom of Thailand, if you win a trial, the prosecutor appeals that win and can keep you in for years and keep appealing and appealing till they can get a judge to convict you. Fortunately for me, they could never get the judge to convict me, but they did have some time to torture and make my life quite miserable for quite a while.
Okay, so let's get into the heart of it. So, even with your strong faith, it must have been horrifying. You're newlywed, you're successful in all these other ways, and here you are in a foreign country. You win the case, and yet you're being kept. Describe to us what the prison life, the actual, you know, cells and what your daily routine would be like, and what type of torture you were exposed to within what you feel comfortable sharing.
Sure. Well, I would tell you this, that the prisons in Southeast Asia are nowhere near what you would find in the United States. There are no buildings like you have here. What you have are cages outside. So there are no walls, there's just bars. When it rains on you. When it's hot on you. When there's mosquitoes, they come in. It's just cages out in the middle of a field. And in each cell block has roughly 4,000 prisoners, and each cell holds between 60 and 100 prisoners. There's no beds. Mm. There's no plumbing. There's no electricity. There's no air conditioning. You're on a hard concrete floor for 13 hours a day, and you're out for the remaining 11 hours a day. When you're out, you're either working in the field, you're working in the factory, or you're doing what I did, which is giving gifts to the guards so you don't have to work in the field. The torture starts minimally. The first things they like to have you do is become a Buddhist, because they're a Buddhist country. So mm-hmm. they'll take you out in the morning, and they'll put 6,000 men on a concrete pad where they have about a 20-foot statue of Buddha, and everybody will kneel in front of and pray to the Buddha. When you refuse to do that, you're immediately singled out. And they won't beat you ruthlessly for that, but they will hit you with sticks across the back and try and force your acquiescence, which I never did. And after 3 or 4 weeks of that, that was stopped. The real torture comes in the administration of the prison. So there's a hierarchy in the prison, which starts with the guards, but it goes down to the prisoners. Inside the prison cells themselves, there are no guards. There are trustees, which are high-ranking prisoners. Usually those are the most okay. ruthless, and their job is to collect money for the guards from those who have it or can have family bring it, and to keep order. And these guys are ruthless. The beatings in there were mm-hmm. daily and nonstop. I was fortunate mm-hmm. in that I only had one real beating, but that real beating broke my back, and that left me paralyzed for just a little bit over a year before I could have medical care to be able to walk again.
So we're going to come back to that, because I want to hear definitely about that situation. I know that happens a little later on. But what do you see that you are not getting released, you're not being sent home? What happens in your mindset, and how do you begin to put something together to keep you in survival mode?
Well, here's what I knew. I knew that if I took on the mindset of the people around me, I was going to die in there. People died every day. People die everywhere every day. But it's a little quicker in a situation like that where there's such poor health and such poor facilities. So I knew right then, if I didn't steal my mind, I would never get out of there. And I started telling people the most insane thing, Jackie. People would continually ask, when are you going home? And I knew I was going home. I didn't really know when, so I picked a date, tomorrow. I'm going home tomorrow. And I said that every day for the next 1,397 days. And people thought I was crazy, but I would say it in every situation. When I was in the hospital with the broken back, they would tell me, you're not going to make it out of here. And I'd say, yeah, I will. I'll go home tomorrow. When I was, before the back was broken, and we would be out in the yard, I'd say it. And what I did was I changed my mindset. You remember we talked about a belief system in the beginning of this interview? Well, the mm-hmm. belief system of the administration and of the government is this. When you get in this prison, we are going to break you, and you're going to confess to this crime, or we're never going to let you out. And when you confess to the crime, we're going to shoot you. This was their belief system, and it was universally wow. accepted by both their government and mine. So I had to have a different belief system. Fortunately, I realized how much Christ had brought me through up to this point. And I realized when I had stopped relying on Christ, and I changed my reliance from myself to my God, and I knew that God could take me out of there tomorrow or today. And every day I would pray to that effect, God, let me go home tomorrow. And I worked towards it, of course. My wife worked diligently with my family to do everything that was possible through the courts and through the government and through the monarchy in Thailand. And one day I was actually right. It was 1,396 days of saying, I'm going home tomorrow. And on the 1,397th day, I went home.
So here you are, you're in the Southeast Asian prison. You set your mind that every day you're going to tell yourself that I'm going home tomorrow. And that's the vision that you're keeping in front of you. And so you lived through horrific things, not only the beatings and torturous situations, but there were people who were committing suicide all around you, people who were giving up hope all around you. Did those type of things wear on your mindset? I mean, there was the flood of 2011, and my understanding is that you were actually in water for 2 months with waste and debris and all kinds of stuff around you. These are things that could break any individual. So, you know, take us deeper and slow down the
Jackie.
Moment as these things are happening. Yeah.
Jackie, those things break every human being, and they don't break God. And was I broken? Absolutely. Had I not been broken on the rock, I would have been broken in every other way. Suicide was a daily event in there, and suicide is a sign that all hope is lost and all happiness is lost, and there's no ability to accept the life that you have. Suicide is a terrible thing, and I would see it often either attempted and actually not just attempted but succeeded at, and they would wear on me, and I would pray, and I would say, God, I understand why they did that. Please keep my mind stayed on you. Because when you can understand why somebody commits suicide, that means you could be in that same situation. It's understandable to the human psyche how terribly painful it is. During the flood of 2011, there were only 100, there were 6,000, about 5,000 prisoners in the prison at the time. They took out close to 5,000 of them. They left 100 of us in the prison. The reason was at the time I had a broken back, and there were other people who were infirm and some people just too dangerous to move. And they left us in those floodwaters. And if you could imagine the water coming up to your waist in your own village, in your own city where you live now, it would seem like it had to be a temporary thing, but this seemed permanent. And the things that come with it are backed up sewers from the city, waste from human waste, snakes floating by you that are deadly, rats scurrying to the roofs, hordes of mosquitoes. And remember, there's no walls in here. So when hordes of mosquitoes come, they sit on you. And there actually are so many, and it's so continuous that eventually you don't even fight it anymore. You don't fight the flies. You don't fight the mosquitoes. There wasn't a man in there that wasn't covered from the bottom of their feet to the top of their head and everywhere in between with sores and ringworms and bites. People were seeping and oozing pus from scratching these wounds. And once they became infected, it was incurable because there was no medical help. So it was a terrible situation to be in. And I could tell you this, that when I look back at it, I know that I had no strength to go through it. If I had to look forward at going through it, I know I would die before I'd go through it. But when you're in the fire, when you're actually in that fire, you'll see Jesus right there. And when you see Jesus right there, you're going to make it out of the fire. So I recall the three Hebrew boys. I'm sure they didn't want to go in that furnace. And I'm sure they weren't. Even their own words were, even if Jesus doesn't save me, I'm not going to give up. So I knew I was going home tomorrow, but I thought it might be to heaven. So my family thought it wasn't. I could never go through it alone, nor did
it. But when we come back, we're going to hear a little bit more about how you got out of there and what the Lord is doing in your life today.
Sun will shine,
Don't Give Up Radio Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
And tonight we are talking with Jim Muller, and he just explained probably one of the most moving situations and circumstances I've had on the show. To imagine yourself with a broken back, imprisoned for a crime you did not commit, actually found not guilty and still being held captive, sitting in sewage with flies and mosquitoes and just in the midst of all of that and so much more, you know, people dying all around you, to hold on to your faith, to hold on to your God, to not relinquish, to not lift your fist up to the sky. And that's the thing that we have to be clear, that the enemy, there is an enemy out there, and the enemy wants us to really turn our eyes to God and say, this is your fault, you did this, you're allowing this. But, you know, there's a cost for living on this planet and living in this world, and there's life. And in this life, there are wars, there are all types of situations and circumstances that we don't have control over. But Jim, you took control over the one thing you could, and that was your mind. And you kept your mind stayed on the Lord. And the word promises that if you abide in me, I will abide in you, and we will be one. And that's the strength that was able to help you to endure and to get through that. And I actually thought that the flood situation happened before your breaking your back. So the fact that you dealt with, I can't even imagine. I can't even imagine what that was like. And I know that when you were in the hospital, what the closest things they had to a hospital, you know, for medical help when that situation happened to you was a place that was, you know, people who had tuberculosis and HIV, but that was the only place that you could be kept. And you said even the doctors said to you, you're not going to make it out of here, but you kept your mindset. So talk to us about how you actually did get out of this situation at long last.
You know, it was a great thing. It was a great thing. And if you don't mind, I'll tell you a story that happened beforehand that told me I was getting
out. Absolutely.
So it's 100 plus degrees in Thailand. The sun is baking. We are now in water that's starting to recede. It's down around our, maybe around our knees, and it's just covered with filth. And we can actually sit on top of tables now. Actually, it was a rooftop of a shed, but we're sitting on this. And we're a little bit hungry. We haven't eaten in 3 or 4 days because the food had gone rotten. And as the water receded, my wife had contacted the guard that we used to pay to make sure I had what I needed. And he went out to her, and she met him at the water's edge and gave him a bag of food. And it was a large bag of food and water. And he came up in his rowboat. They were rowing around the prison. And he came up, and he gave me this bag of food. We hadn't eaten in days. I was up there with a preacher from Africa who would – he made it through flying, too. He was just an incredibly stalwart Christian. And we opened up this bag of food, and there were cheeseburgers and fruit and milk. And we knew we were going to go home. So that was the beginning of knowing that the fire was coming to an end. But the way I actually get out of that prison, I had lost every appeal to the court. When I say appeal, I don't mean non-criminal charges. We would appeal to them to let me go. It was against the treaty between the United States and Thailand to hold me. I had won the cases. I'm an American citizen. Let me go home. And it just wasn't happening through the court system or through the government system. So my wife and children had started petitioning the King of Thailand. And the King of Thailand is known as a pretty benevolent man. And on things like his birthday or his anniversaries or his wife's birthday, he'll often give pardons or similar type of royal decrees to prisoners and let them out. So that's what we work for. I spent 6 of those years on and off in the Thai prisons, and the rest being held in the community. So on occasion I'd get bail, and then the court would revoke it, and it was a pretty difficult time. And my wife and kids would actually go to the palace once a week, and they would leave a letter at the Privy Council, which is the king's counselors at the palace, and talk to them and get to know them. And my daughter would write these beautiful letters about her daddy's a good man, can't the king let him out? Really, really good kids and really, really good wife. So over time, the Privy Council would tell my family, for at the right time, the king will act. Well, in 2013, this was actually 9 years later from the original winning of the first case, the king wrote a royal pardon for myself for his wife's birthday, the queen's birthday. And some military agents showed up, military from Thailand showed up at the prison, put me on chains, drove me to the airport, put me on a plane, and flew me to Los Angeles. Now, the difficult part was, because I was a Thai prisoner, my wife, who's a Thai citizen, wasn't able to get a visa to America. So I spent the next year without my wife and kids also. And they've just come to America now, and they love it.
Coming to now?
Just now. It took 1 year and 6 months to get a visa for my wife. And it's amazing to me. When I arrived in the United States, I was in Los Angeles before I moved to my home in Florida. And I was working with some attorneys there to get her visa. And they said, look, what you need to do is you need to fly your wife to Mexico and just bring her across the border. And that was the easiest way to do it. We didn't, because of who we are, obviously.
Right.
You know, we wanted to stay within the law. But it was an amazing thing. My wife's an attorney. She has an MBA, and she's a mother of 2 American children, and she's been married to me for 15 years. So if anybody qualifies to immigrate to the United States, you would think it would be her. But the embassy in Thailand didn't approve that for 1 year and 6 months. And, of course, Washington was no help. I was, in fact, in kind of egg on their face. They sent an American to be executed. He was guilty in their mind. They spent their time and effort creating the law to do it. And now I had the audacity, by the grace of God, to show back up and say, you are wrong. So it was difficult to bring her here. But she's here.
Wow.
And she loves
Wow. I say wow a lot, but I am sitting here in my chair, completely moved in every way possible, in my mind, in my heart, in my soul, in my spirit, at what God has been able to do in your life. And it has been a long, hard journey, and that's what I want people to understand. Some of us, I was just sharing this, some of us have a cycling life of highs and lows, and then some of us have
right.
journeys that are like Joseph, where it's a series
right.
of lows, where you think, God, I know you gave me a vision, going back to that beginning, conversation
right.
we had, I know you gave me something, I envisioned it, I saw it, where is it, when is it going to happen, and to the point where I don't think he ever let go of it, but he got to a place where it's just, I just want to get out of here. I just want to get out of this prison. I just want to get out of here. And to see what God was able to do in his life and to hear your story and to know that the same God has that same power today.
It's so amazing, Jackie, and that you bring up Joseph, because I am nowhere near the character of a man that Joseph was. I'm more the Nebuchadnezzar kind. But I look at his story, and when I think about not quitting, and when I think about success in life and success in our Christian walk, it's often brought to me, because I was considered guilty. I was 85 headlines in a row, 85 days in a row, called a murderer and a hitman. The whole world thought I was a creep and a criminal. And think about Joseph, since you brought him up. He was in a prison. His own family betrayed him. Second,
right.
he was a slave. And third,
mm-hmm.
he was a prisoner. Fourth,
yep.
he was the governor of the then-known world. And that it was, according to Bible scholars, they would expect it's about 28-year journey that he went through to become the governor of Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
When
wow.
was he a winner? Was he a winner when he was the governor? Or was he a winner when he was a slave? I think that the second he held on to God, which apparently was from that vision on, Joseph was a champion of God. And even though the world would have thought he's a loser, he's a slave, he's a prisoner, he's a criminal, God revealed who he was in the palace. And if we can hold on, and this is the difficult part, if we try to hold on ourselves. So if we can hold on to God, God will reveal in the palace that we are his man. So I expect if it's on the earth, great. It's certainly going to be in heaven. But if you hold on, no matter if you're a slave, if you're in the pit, if you're a prisoner, if you hold on, God is going to place you in that palace and reveal to the whole universe that you're his man. And that's where I want to be.
Yeah. You have brought me to tears today, but joyful ones indeed. I know that in my journey, as I was reflecting this past week and the years that suicide was definitely on the tip of my tongue, and as I look back and thought, there was no way that the Lord could revive the life that I had or correct the mistakes that I made, and I was so incredibly wrong. About what he can do.
Amen.
And he's not even finished. I know that he is actually taking me somewhere so unexpected that I can't even begin to understand the goodness of it. And so I for sharing your story. Please let people know, what are you doing today? What ministries are you involved in? And is there any way that people can, support or connect with you?
Jackie, thanks for asking. And, I'm so ashamed to say, because I've been a producer my whole life, I've been on a honeymoon for the past several months, and we cut ourselves off from everybody. Actually, I met you on the internet, and I had to, respond to you because I love your show. But right now we're just producing our first of three books, and the first book is called I Cannot Fail, and it goes through the first 2 years of this.
Okay.
That will be ready for distribution in September. And I'd love to send you a copy when it's done and maybe come back on your show.
Absolutely.
I'm raising my kid.
Great. I was just going to say, I'm going to continue, but I just became a certified producer for a local television here in New York, and I'm looking to do some segments of Don't Give Up on television. So who knows? Maybe able
that
to have you as a live guest. But absolutely, absolutely. And what else is coming down the pike? Anything else?
Well, if you could imagine, I wasn't able to live with my children during this time. So, but for the last 5 years, I haven't lived with my children. And my children have never lived in the United States. So, Jackie, we've taken road trips. We've shown them how big this country is, how diverse it is, and how great it can be. And I will say this, that has been the life of the last year, has been to reconnect with those children, to hug my wife every day, to do the things that a husband and wife should do. Can you imagine that for all that time, my wife never had a husband to open the door for her? Did she need it? No. But did she want it? Yes. She never had a husband to drive her. So that's what we've been doing. We've just been reconnecting in this wonderful family. Of course, we're back in the church, and we're telling the story in churches around the country. And really, the story we're telling is God of your fathers is your God too. If you can believe that your God actually helped those despicable people in the Bible, many of them, you know, by today's standards, they weren't going to make it to the White House by today's standards. But yet here was God raising them up to the tops of the earth. If you can believe that his love could be so deep for them, why would you expect it's not so deep for you? It is. So we're enjoying that. We're enjoying his love, and we're building our new career. Unfortunately, my old careers were devastated, and this situation kind of defined our family. So we're using it, since this is where we're defined right now, we're using it to show the power of God in what I feel are terrible and treacherous times on the earth. And the only salvation, you may never sit in a flood in a Bangkok prison floating on your back hoping you can walk when it's over, but I can guarantee you that something's going to come your way. And if you know who God is, you're not going to falter during it. You're going to make it through it.
Well, I've got to say, you have nothing to be ashamed of. Absolutely. In Bible times, they would take 1 year off to be with their wives before anything. And so don't even nod your head twice about that. Enjoy that. And I just send an extra blessing for your wife and kids as well for standing by you through those 9 years, because we also live in a society that has forgotten how to do that. May the Lord continue to bless you and keep you. Thank you so much for sharing with us tonight.
It was my pleasure. God bless you and your radio ministry. I love it.
Thank you. Thank you. We will definitely keep in touch. To our listeners, I know you were encouraged by that, and I want you to take heart of what was said and tell yourself, keep in mind, to be your own best hero, because the greatest hero of all said that you were worth it when he gave his life for you on the cross. Until next time. My desire.
so long. But I found my way to God. It's my desire to live for you. If you could see where Jesus brought me from to where I am today, then you would know
Show with Jackie Wayans.